I think if people knew Fergus, I don't know his chances of passing
ally
off
creds.
As just an ally. He'll probably see this and read me for that, but he knows it's true deep down.
We can edit it out if you want.
No, keep it in.
Keep it in. You want him to know.
Yeah, he knows.
Welcome to The Outtakes, the official podcast of National Student Pride, the podcast where we go behind the scenes with some incredible guests, doing their bit for the LGBTQ plus community. For this episode, I'm joined by Devin Ibanez, the first out Major League rugby player and LGBTQ plus advocate. Thank you, Devin. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
So, Devin, on this podcast, what we like to do is sort of build a bit of a character profile and, you know, get to know a bit about the origins of the guests we have on. So would you be able to sort of touch on, you know, coming to terms with your sexuality and what that experience was like for you?
I was very, very lucky, first of all, growing up, just like in terms of my family, where I was living in the world. You know, I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts, but more specifically, I grew up in Brookline, which is like a very nice town, super inclusive, lots of like out LGBT plus people from my school that I remember.
Okay.
So I was very lucky in that respect. But in terms of coming to terms with my sexuality, I actually came out to my parents when I was 11. So
that is young.
That was, I came out to my mom as bisexual at the time.
By now, gay later.
Yes, exactly. By now, gay later, very much on that pipeline. I just had nothing but like incredible support from my parents, but it was more just around sports and school, which I think some people can relate to. That was quite different from my
own experience.
So you
were out to just sort of your family circle, and then that was like a very separate from your school and sports experience.
Especially at that age, at like 11, and I don't think I really started telling like friends and things like that until I was a little bit older, and then even so, I always kept it very like pretty small circle, case by case basis. I was the kind of person where like if it came up, I wasn't going to lie about it,
but it came out so young. Like that is like young, but also I guess your peers, they don't necessarily have the level of maturity to have those conversations necessarily, right?
Yeah, I think it's more, again, just a testament to my parents and like the environment they created. Like some of my earliest memories are literally just my parents being like, we don't care who you love as long as you're happy, we're going to love you. And like none of these things that made any like impression on me at the time, because you don't know what they're saying. But then when you do actually start having those feelings about your sexuality, you just know like, I don't need to hide it from my parents. I already know that they've told me from as long as I can remember that that's fine and they're happy if I'm happy.
And I guess that's a testament to if you have supportive parents, the type of experience your child can have is completely worlds apart from, you know, when you're not given that support system.
Definitely. And I mean, yeah, and I know how like privileged I am to be able to have that kind of experience, because even with that support, like I think we all know it, there's so much that's outside of your family's control and your parents' control that, you know, makes it so difficult. I'm just like so grateful to actually have that kind of support system behind me.
Cool. Thank you. And then I guess we were just sort of discussing that swimming was the first sport that came into your life. So when did that happen? And then when did you sort of make the transition into rugby?
I was swimming as my first sport. So probably when I was like 5, 6 years old, I was on a swim team, and it was something that my mom used to do growing up. So I think that was kind of the, you know, putting the kids to follow in her shoes. She always says that I word it like that. She's like, you know, you did like
swimming, like a pageant
right?
mom kind of thing.
She was like, you know, you did enjoy it though, right? And I'm like, I did enjoy eating rice balls and snacks at the meets. Like, yes, I enjoyed that part of it, but I don't know so much the long swimming in the cold pool. I did that for most of my childhood and a couple other sports. And then I got to high school age, so like around 14, and I was just very ready to move on from swimming and do something new. And it was
something
kind of
impact.
Yeah, something with a little bit more contact. I mean, completely, it was that. I wanted to do, like, try a contact sport. I was a kid who had a lot of, like, anger issues growing up.
Really?
And a lot of trouble, like, controlling them. Yeah, I was.
That shocks me, because you've got very, like, calm energy.
Well, when you spend 16 years getting to just play rugby and go all out. And
you've got your outlet.
When you have an outlet now versus when you're, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old and you're going through puberty and you're going through all the things that come from, you know, being in middle school and being an LGBT plus kid, like there's a lot of anger to be spread around through sport. So I had this idea that I wanted to do a contact sport. And so my first initial thought, like I think most American kids, is I was like, hey, why don't I try American football? Because that's what everybody does. And I just like absolutely hated it.
It's very stop and start, I found. Well, obviously I watched the Super Bowl for the halftime show. But then I did catch a bit of the second half, itself. Or like the third quarter, I guess. And I was like, this is very stop and start. Like, this is a slow process.
It is a very slow process. And that's the game, too. I mean, games are the fast-paced version. The trainings themselves, it was like 3 hours of you just like standing there and people telling you what you're supposed to do on each play. So I did not connect with it. I'm a super ADHD kid as well, so it was like very hard to keep my attention like that.
We need momentum.
Yeah, I'm like, I need to get this going a little bit quicker than just tell me what to do every time.
Scrum.
So exactly. So I actually stopped playing after a couple months because I also was getting bullied. Like, it was a terrible just environment in general. Just like, I never enjoyed the culture that at least my school had in American football. I won't speak to the entire sport because I haven't played at all levels of American football. But eventually I just stopped playing and then I wasn't really playing any sport. And then eventually I looked at what other sports we had and rugby was on the list.
Yeah, it really shocked me that your school had rugby because to me it's not a typically like American sport, I guess.
It's definitely not a stereotypically American sport, but I was really lucky to have a school that we had one of the oldest rugby programs in Northeast and New England where I was from.
So I guess Boston's got quite a large like British and Irish.
Big Irish, especially the Irish influence is like a really big influence there. So, and one thing a lot of people don't really know or think about in terms of scale is the rugby community in the US. It's actually the second largest community of players in the world behind the UK.
That's crazy.
Just in terms of sheer numbers of players because of just how big the US is, really.
That's crazy because I just never associate the country with rugby.
Yeah, it's really big at the university level. Okay. So like not as much at the youth and high school level. But yeah, I just sort of fell into it and picked it up and found out that I was half decent at it and never stopped
doing
it.
Just a bit.
Well, I started out relatively average, like most. I've never been like a super good athlete or anything. I just found a sport that kind of motivated me and connected with me.
So then how did you make the transition from rugby at a high school level to then it becoming much more of a career for you?
I never, when I got into rugby, really envisioned it as like a career or something that I would do. Like, it was just something I was just so passionate about and I loved doing it that I was like, let me just keep taking this as far as I can take it and see what happens. So, you know, after I started it in high school, I ended up becoming captain of the team. So I was taking it a little more seriously then. And then I went to university. So I went to UMass Amherst, which was a Division I university.
What did you study?
I studied sports management.
Sports management. Okay.
Yes, I did. And with the aim of working in some sport front office someday, which, you know, I'm not interested in
what
now.
What does that entail? What does sports management as a degree entail?
So it's basically business management, but through the lens of sport. Yeah. So it's like if I wanted to work in a professional sport organization or wanted to be doing more like grassroots type stuff. But yeah, I enjoy it. I still have a passion for that, but that was what I was there studying at the time. But yeah, so I played in university at a pretty good level and was captain of my university team. And then after university, I was like, cool, now I'm not tethered to this one place. I can just go and travel the world and play rugby. So I just, after that, I did a little bit of time playing in Australia. So I played for a few months in Sydney. I ended up living in New Zealand for almost a year. So I played rugby over there in Auckland. And then I foolishly decided to play a season in Scarborough and played for there for about 8 months.
Like?
It was horrible.
What was
one of the worst times of my life?
Because it's Scarborough.
Not just because it's Scarborough, but I'm not going to say that it wasn't because it was Scarborough.
It was Scarborough adjacent.
It was definitely some factors about it being Scarborough. It was middle of the winter, pretty much. I mean, because I got there from October.
This country is not good in the winter.
Yeah, I was living there from October until like April. It was like literally the worst times of year.
You need an SAT lamp stat.
And I was going there from New Zealand, which is just like beautiful all the time and warm and lovely. So it was a very steep drop off from my experience.
Like people just go into the supermarket barefoot. It's just a freer, like more nice place. Like I would move to New Zealand if I could. So Devin, another big part of your life, like rugby, is your lovely relationship with your boyfriend Fergus.
Yes.
How did you originally meet?
So we originally met on a dating app, an unnamed dating app, and we basically started seeing each other through that, and he was basically studying in the
US. And that was when you were in the UK? Oh.
No, so we met when I was in the US. This was in 2017 or so, that time, and he was there doing some research because he was just finishing up. He did a degree in biology, and he had just been finishing up and was doing like kind of a research placement, so we met while he was over there and started seeing each other and dated for probably like 7 months or so before he had to come back to the UK. And
Yeah, and you stayed in touch once?
We stayed in touch. We said that we were going to be breaking up and that it wasn't going to make sense because he was going to be living in the UK and I was going to be living in the US.
But love finds a way.
Here we are 6 years later, still together. So yeah, we basically just started dating long distance after he came back and made it work.
Okay. And then when we were researching and prepping for your interview, we saw that you weren't actually out to any of your rugby team or publicly while in your relationship. And was it 3 years that you were in the closet for?
Just about. I mean, and again, in the closet, like, it's all...
It's gray area.
It's all perspective and context where it's like a lot of people I know. Again, it wasn't necessarily something I was even ashamed of or was hiding about myself. It was more just I was at the point where I was just very consciously keeping it separate from rugby.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't...
Compartmentalizing.
Yeah. It was just something I'd gotten so used to and had become so like normal for me to do that I just convinced myself that it made my life easier, that it preserved opportunities for me in the sport. So I just like... wouldn't really connect those things. So there were maybe a couple people I'd played rugby with over the years who, you know, really close friends of mine who I'd come out to. But in terms of like, is that something that the average teammate who'd been playing with me for 4 or 5 years would know? Like, no, they wouldn't have any idea.
Okay.
So I had like not been really talking about that. So when I was seeing Fergus, yeah, for probably the better part of 3 years, just about, it was, you know, weren't posting photos of us together on social media. I was, you know, not telling any of my rugby teammates about it and just kind of having it be something with me and my family. So, yeah, I was, like, not really talking about it publicly, like, at all.
And would he, like, attend games and go watch you play?
That was the awkward
bit. Was that something to navigate?
It was definitely something to navigate. He did come to see me play once, maybe twice, but I know one time he did come specifically to watch me play, like, by himself. And that was a really awkward one where it had to be like,
and
so
that was when
how
you were
are we
playing
positioning
in the UK
this?
Or the US?
No, this was in the US.
So. Oh, okay.
And so it was like, how do we position this? Like, what is my stake? Yeah. Why am I here? And how do we know each other?
What are our storylines?
Yeah, like getting that all aligned because...
Aligned.
Yeah, about how we were going to be doing that.
Imagine the car journey like, are we aligned? Yes,
we're aligned. Yeah, we're all on the same page. But I just felt so bad because he's also such like a social person. He's like very much the kind of person
who
go and just
like
talk to everyone. Yeah,
right?
And just like felt like he couldn't really talk to anyone while he's at the games. Would just kind of like wait in the corner and then just like... give me a hug and have a picture after the game and all that stuff. But, you know, it was even an awkward moment where we were getting a ride back from one of the matches where he'd come to watch me play. And we were getting a ride from one of my teammates. And sure enough, the usual thing of like, oh, I'm like, oh, my friend Fergus is here from the UK. He's come to watch me play, you know, whatever, giving us both a ride home. And then obviously all the questions come in of like, oh, so like, yeah, how do you know Fergus? And like, how did you meet? Like, was it from
an
the other time?
Dating app.
I'm like, were you? Is this from when you used to play in the UK? And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
This is from when I used to play in Scarborough. This is Fergus. So it was just, yeah, it was just all that
so
stuff
Fergus,
like that.
Fergus, where in Scarborough do you live?
Yeah. So it was very, very awkward. And, you know, not just for me, but I'm sure especially for him, where he really didn't want to do anything that was like outside of my boundaries and any way that was going to like out me or make me feel uncomfortable. So it was just like... yeah, not a good experience for him to try to like come and watch me like on the sly, like, oh, I'm not dating this person, I'm just here to be a good friend. Like,
I'm just an ally.
Yeah, just an ally, which I think if people knew Fergus, I don't know his chances of passing
ally
off as just an ally. He'll probably see this and read me for that, but he knows it's true deep down.
We can edit it out if you want.
No, keep it in.
Keep it in. You want him to
yeah,
know.
Yeah, yeah, he knows.
Just listening to you talk, to me it almost seems like this wasn't about your personal battles with your sexuality, that you weren't really bringing this to the forefront of your rugby career. It's almost much more like you were scared of this, like limiting you with opportunities, affecting your relationship with your teammates. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, but I mean, that's also my perception of it. I mean, I think it'd be impossible to say that there's still not the impacts of like internalized homophobia and just the environment that I was in, even under the best of circumstances with the way that I was raised and everything. Like, you know, as much as I'd like to say, oh, I wasn't ashamed and I was clearly still afraid of the way people would react. And, you know, I think I had this fear of, especially around the time when I was in university and I was a little bit younger, I really had this fear of like, just being known as the gay rugby player, and like that would be all that I would be known for.
5 years later, it's your brand.
Some things have changed since then, but at the time, that was one of my like really biggest fears. Was I was like, I don't want
being reduced to this.
Yeah, I'm like, I put so much into this. This sport is like my entire life, and I have a lot of intensity that I put towards it, and I just didn't want it to be about. Like, oh, it's not about how hard he works. It's not about what he does on the field. It's like, oh, well, this is his identity, and that's how we know him. And at the time, to me, that didn't sound like something that I like wanted, and I felt like it was
almost,
you know,
devaluing your sports.
Yeah, like, and that it would be reductive, right? And that I would, you know, I also just convinced myself that it would make it harder for me to connect with my teammates, and that, you know, my teammates wouldn't want to play for a team where they had an openly gay captain. And whether or not these things were true or founded anything, it's just the way that I felt from the environment that I was in. And, you know, that was just kind of my reality at the time, was, you know, that's what was going
to
happen.
How do you feel like your coming out impacted the way you perceived in the media and like to fans? Did you feel it necessarily?
I mean, I wasn't like somebody who had some massive, like, rugby players, professional rugby players. Like, we're not talking about the NBA.
Yeah.
We're not talking about the NFL, especially in America. Like, I'm not going to pretend I was some person with like droves of fans who knew who I was. For me, it was more around just like the hundreds and, I mean, maybe even thousands of people I'd connected with playing rugby throughout the years. And whether those were coaches, whether those were teammates that I really respected and valued, it was just like this entire network that I was now worried was, you know, maybe I were going to lose friends, or maybe they, you know, maybe it would be more that they would say things to me, and then I would just decide that I don't want to be, you know, change my perception of them and make me rethink, you know, the impact that rugby had had on my life.
It was almost like risking pulling the rug on everything you've built so far.
Exactly.
Right?
And I think I also convinced myself that, you know, I didn't want it to be a situation where, one, where I was maybe getting opportunities, because now they're like, oh, well, it's the gay rugby player, we have to include him a little bit, because, you know, like, I didn't want to be perceived like
that. Just, like, a tick in the box.
Yeah, and I also didn't want it to go the other way, which is like ultimately homophobic people who are still in leadership positions in rugby just being like, you know, this is a team sport, we don't need another distraction who's just banging on about his personal identity all the time. So it's like there's all these different things that just kind of swirl around in your head, and again, that you convince yourself are true, whether or not they are at the time, they feel very real.
You're almost just lost in the midst of it all, right? Like, there's just so much to think about.
Definitely. And again, it's just the not knowing. And, you know, I think that's one thing, is people don't really understand that a lot of the time, you know, the environments, especially when it comes to environments within sport, it's not always just about, oh, are we overtly homophobic, right? Are we overtly saying, oh, if you're a fairy, don't come play with us? Like, I think we can all acknowledge and understand why that's wrong and why that's harmful. But what you don't see as much is you don't really see them understanding the impact of not creating spaces that are like very outwardly and explicitly inclusive of queer people. And the difference between those two things is massive, because when you don't have that, it really does create this environment where you are going to create these narratives, right? You are going to assume the worst case scenario, because the fact of the matter is we've got hundreds of years of evidence of sport and how like heteronormative the environments are, that's something that's reasonable for us to accept, like expect. Like, it's something that we have basis behind. So I don't think there's that quite understanding of how much work needs to be done to undo that perception. I think people just sort of see it as like, oh, well, I wouldn't mind if a gay person came to play with us, so everything must be cool. It's like, well, no. There's also, you need to get to the point where the average gay person would feel like they could rock up to your club and do it before you really get to that point.
Because there's a difference. Like, I think we find this in like university, you know, level sports as well in this country, that all these societies and teams will advertise themselves as being inclusive and they're welcoming queer people, but they're not at a place yet where the culture within them teams can allow a queer person to enter comfortably.
Yeah.
And like, they don't, that space isn't there for them necessarily.
Yeah, and I mean, that's even another stage of it too, because it's also not really at the point where you've got rugby teams that are actively being like, if you are queer or LGBT plus, come play for us, unless it's one of the teams that plays within International Gay Rugby, which is like a massive global organization that has inclusive gay rugby teams specifically set up, you know, for LGBT plus athletes. But you're not really seeing, you know, straight, for lack of a better word, teams who are going and doing the same thing. Like, you're still not even seeing them outwardly
They're
doing
segmented
that.
And,
it's just like, you know, again, it's just not something that's seen as that big of a problem. They're like, oh, well, we'll make them feel welcome if they come into our team, and then they come out and we'll do our best to support them. And that's not even necessarily every club. Yeah. That's like the best case scenario, is you're going to have a club that at least understands that if somebody does come out, that they're going to try to rally behind them. And
it's not just
support
virtue signaling and just empty
exactly
words, right?
Exactly. And I think there is that intent there, but it's just, there's not the proactiveness to actually like create those environments in a way that is actually effective. And then they wonder where the disconnect is and why there's not that many athletes that are coming out and joining their teams, you know?
Did you experience a change when you did come out?
I mean, there was definitely a little bit of that from like the wider rugby community of like, okay, an article online on like a rugby page where they're like, oh, they have to read this post about an openly gay like rugby player. And obviously the first thing you see is like, why does this matter? Like, who cares? Like, a rugby player is gay. If he's gay, I don't care. As long as he can play, he can be on my team. And it's like some of them in a supportive way, other ones in a not supportive way of just being like, get this shit off of my feed. Like, I don't want to see it. But they just don't understand that, again, that it does matter, because the fact of the matter is there's so many other people who don't feel like they can be upfront about that and feel like rugby is not a place where they can do that. So it's like, that's a lot of what I saw in terms of some resistance from the rugby community, is because anytime somebody even suggests that it's not inclusive, that it's not like the greatest sport in the world, which I wouldn't be playing it for 16 years and dropping everything in my life if I didn't also agree, but it doesn't mean that there's not a lot of room for improvement. Yeah. So I think that's one of those big areas where, you know, I did get some of that resistance, but I will say in terms of like people in person who I actually like knew cared about their perceptions, like 99.99% of my experiences with all of the people I played with and anybody after I came out was like overwhelmingly positive, of them just like coming up to me being super supportive, and also even ones who were being like very empathetic in the sense of being like, honestly, until you came out and started talking so openly about your experiences, like, I had never really reflected on the fact of like how inclusive or not inclusive these kinds of environments we're in like are, and just sort of realizing that being supportive of somebody after they come out isn't necessarily enough when, you know, they have the kinds of environments that have been created. So that for me was like really impactful to see, was just seeing actually that a lot of my teammates really respected me a lot more after I did this and was, you know, speaking about it really openly, to the point where they took me aside and would tell me that really directly. So like that meant the world to me. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that must have been such a relief and like weight off your shoulders as well.
It really was. But then there was also the kind of like other complicated side of it, which is like my coach, one of my coaches at the time, who had had plenty of bad experiences with, of like him making homophobic jokes and like comments over the years that really contributed to me feeling uncomfortable coming out, and like I wouldn't
sort of
be
exemplified
safe.
The culture that you sort of had
exactly like
with, right?
The person who I almost would like pin of like the poster boy of like how I would not want a coach to be if I was on a team. He, after I came out, was in the same way as everyone else, in theory supportive, was like, really proud of you for doing this, like all this other stuff, like got your back all the way. But it was just like, for me, I was just like, again, I was like, it would have been really lovely to know these things when I was spending 3 years playing for you, miserable all the time, not believing the fact that I had to take coaching advice from somebody who was just like such, just like an outward, just like bigot, and just like homophobic asshole, that I was just like,
I love that American asshole.
I just, I can't, like,
that's so Boston.
It's very asshole. Boston. It's a very Boston thing. You can't take it out of me entirely. But that was what was difficult for me. And that kind of brought into that same thing where it's like this perception of how inclusive it is didn't necessarily match how actually it was. It's like, it's great and all to be like, oh, we're really happy to you, but how are you actually creating an environment for somebody where they can do that and, you know, not feel like they're at risk of, you know, being punished or being ridiculed by the person who leads their rugby program, you know?
I'm not sure if you've seen this clip, but we found an old news segment online and we want to show you it, because I found it and I was like, this is the most hilarious thing I've ever seen in my life.
Is it of me?
I sent it. Yes, it's of you.
And he is the first openly gay Major League Rugby player. Here's SportsCenter 5's Bob Halloran tonight.
Rugby players are tough. They do things like walking in a snowstorm in shorts.
I've been playing rugby for 12 years. I picked it up when I was 15 years old at Brookline High School.
Rugby players are big, strong guys who like to run full speed into other big, strong guys. It is not a game for the timid or meek.
I would like to play until the wheels fall off. So, I mean, I would like to play well into my 40s.
Brookline native and professional rugby player Devaney Banez is as tough as they come. He's also gay.
What was your reaction to that? Was that not bizarre, being discussed in that way?
Okay, I want to... A few things on that. I will say the person who did that, the interviewer, Bob Halloran, was an absolute, like, class act. Okay. Like, super well-intentioned. And I think, again, this is what happens when you have an organization that is basically, again, a mainstream media outlet. I had reached out to some people in sport departments of various media outlets. let's give credit to this, this channel. They are the only one who decided to interview me and to do anything about it and to like even do a piece about it. So I am very aware that this type of interview was not in Bob's general wheelhouse of topics and guests that he would usually cover. So I'm, again, super well-intentioned.
Credit where credit's due.
And very grateful to him, and also know that he did it as something that was like close to his heart. He like was very personal to me and just letting me know that he has like several openly gay sons and that was like super connected to the story. And so again, it super well-intentioned, and it's just a matter of not necessarily having...
I think I found it so hilarious and it really resonated with me in a strange way, because you can see what new territory this is for them. And they did this weird sort of dance around, like walk on the eggshells, kind of like reporting on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
And I mean, just also that their big focus of it was...
He's also gay.
Well, yeah, the big focus on it was that, look, a person could be masculine and be tough and then also be gay, and isn't this an incredible thing to see? And again, like, I don't mind that message. I think it is important to highlight that any type of person can be openly gay. But yeah, it did... It probably wasn't giving what they thought it was giving. But yeah, I mean, again, I think it does just go into that same kind of point where it's like there are some people out there who are really well-intentioned, and I think... It doesn't become how apparent, again, like you said, where that disconnect is and like the way that it's kind of viewed and talked about until you actually are in that kind of a space. And then you're just like being interviewed, and that was the result. But I stand by all the things I said in that interview. And I also am genuinely not just saying, I mean, Bob has since retired, I know, and is like a really long time. I think it was like, you know, one of the most successful ones in the region. So that's the thing. Like, this was a direct, basically, thing where I had reached out and they could have very easily not done anything with it. Like, just be like, it's not like their bosses were being like, you really got to cover this piece. It was like something that they picked up as like, I want to do this. So again, I have all the respect, even if it isn't going to be something that people look at in 30 years and be like, wow, media was really ready for an openly gay rugby player when he came out.
So, Devin, at what point did you make the move from the US to the UK? And how did you transition your rugby career during that?
So I'd just been here for a little bit over a year now. So I moved here, I think last December.
Okay, still quite new.
So, yeah, so just over a year. I feel like I've settled in pretty much now, but... the transition, I mean, I moved over here for a few reasons. One of it was rugby. I felt like I'd hit a little bit of a dead end in terms of Boston, and just, I'd been there for so long and everybody knows me, obviously, of just like me being there and playing
famous.
For so long, not because of that, literally for no reason, not at all because of fame, but just because it's like when you play in the same tiny community competition for 15 years, I think every rugby player will be able to relate, like, it's not that big of a world, right? And so when you've been playing in that one region of the United States for 14, 13 years, it's like everybody already feels like they know what to expect out of you, they know what your potential is, and like they know what you're going to get, you know, when you're playing in a game. So I think for me, I just kind of like plateaued where it was like I needed to be somewhere where people didn't have these like set expectations of what I could do. So I was ready to move on rugby wise. Yeah, a new challenge and just like bounce around somewhere new. I was ready for rugby wise. And obviously, like, Fergus. Love life-wise, Fergus is living in the UK and is now in his last year of medical school, so I wanted to kind of, like, be over here while he's finishing up being a doctor, and I didn't have any reason why I'd be staying in the U.S. jobs-wise, really, like, my work that I was doing at the time. I wasn't too, like, tripping over myself to keep that job, and so I ended up actually finding a new job over here as well, which is how I ended up here. So I got connected with a company after I came out, where I started as a panelist. So I used to just do speaking engagements for a company called MyGWork. And basically they just do like LGBT plus recruitment and help companies not only be more inclusive, but just like do trainings and bring in different people to the organization. So I really was passionate about that and the idea of, you know, taking my passion for rugby and trying to make rugby more inclusive, which there's not always as much interest from the rugby community to take my advice on that. So it's like, you know what, let's go for a more general approach and focus on how we can make companies in general more inclusive.
Let's go for a trickle down
strategy. So I ended up doing that and basically interviewed for a position doing customer success, which is just, again, just directly working with different organizations to really understand like what they need to do to become more inclusive, where they are on their journey, and figuring out how can we make your company a place that's better for LGBT plus people and just all people to come and, you know, thrive in. So that was how I ended up over here. And so they actually ended up sponsoring my work visa and making it possible for me to come and live here with my partner and move. So
still opening up a bank was a nightmare, though.
Yes, still opening a bank was a nightmare, even with all the right things and all the right documents. They still make it as difficult as possible. But yeah, I ended up being here really for a lot of reasons. It ended up being the rugby, it ended up being the career, it ended up being my love life, and it just seemed to make sense. You know, yeah. I was at the stage where I could definitely use a little bit of a change, and yeah, I think I was very ready to move on from Boston after being there.
What's the thing you miss the most about Boston?
There is one thing I do really, really miss about Boston. I had set up like a community touch rugby thing that I had pretty much kind of started myself during the pandemic.
And what was that? Oh, like tag rugby?
Yeah, just like touch tag rugby. And, you know, it was all kind of became a thing during the pandemic to where we didn't have organized rugby going on. We were at that point where you were allowed to be outside with masks on and stuff like that, but we couldn't still get into like contact sport. And so what started as, you know, me and a couple of the kids from the local high school and one of my friends ended up growing into, you know, some weeks we would have 30 people, some weeks we'd have 15 people at the set, and just like we would just go and we would just play touch rugby for like 3 hours straight, and it would be like high school boys, high school girls, people who had never played rugby before. It'd be professionals like myself and others who were either active or former, and people who played for Team USA and like fantastic women's college players. Like it was just such a huge mix of just like the community.
Just a melting
pot. Yeah, and I just had never found this place where I felt so included, because quite frankly, I was the one in control of the entire thing, because I was the one who brought them all there.
That's incredible, because almost you're able to take your learnings from the cultures that coaches in the past you had were creating, and you were then able to completely turn that on its head when you were able to sort of, I guess, step up to that coach mantle. Do you feel like you try to help contribute to like a more inclusive kind of space?
I definitely want to, and I mean, I haven't done as much formal coaching, I mean, especially since coming out, just because between playing and everything else that I'm doing, I don't have the time to really fully commit and put in what I'd want to put in for coaching. But that just ended up being something that was just so organic, where it was just like we all needed a space to play, and I just like became a thing where everybody was welcome, because I wanted everyone to be welcome there. I wanted everyone to have fun, and I wanted to have a way that, you know, I could stay active and do what I wanted to do as well. And it just ended up being just like such a beautiful experience, and I was so close with everyone there that I think that's been the thing that I've really missed since I moved, is not just being able to like go and once a week see like 30 of my closest friends in one place and do the thing that I love most, which is just like messing around and playing a sport that I love. That's been the thing that I definitely like miss the most. It's probably been the hardest to replace, to be honest.
And what would you say is your favorite thing about living in London?
I mean, I do like having my own place with Fergus, and actually being in the same place as my partner is a very, very nice perk of being in London. I mean, we lived together a little bit in the US, but it wasn't like we didn't have our own place together. Like, I was living with my parents still at the time, so even when he was here, it was like him, me, and my parents. Yeah. So it was like, you know,
different vibe.
Yeah, not quite the same vibe. So yeah, I mean, it's also just great to be in a new place. Where one thing I'll also say is I feel like I've made way more like queer friends in London than I made, you know, when I was in Boston.
Now it's January and we're now newly entering 2024. I was wondering whether we could get your ins and outs for 2024. We've got bit of a quick fire round.
Oh, God. Ins and outs
for
2024.
We've just got a little... And you just need to quick fire in, out. If you want to give a bit of rationale behind it, feel free. So, Crocs, are they in or out for 2024?
Oh, God, they're out.
They're out?
They're so far out. I don't understand how these snuck back in.
Are you not on board with them anyway?
No, I don't understand how they snuck back in. I do acknowledge they've improved in their functionality. I have a friend who's, like, obsessed and whatever they have every variation of hiking croc and leisure croc, and like it's too much. No,
stick to your lane, stay in your lane.
It's a no for me. I'm not going to get into people's, you know, whatever you do in the comfort of your own home, your own personal choice, like you can wear them, but
just don't wear them
for me. it's a hard no for me.
Okay, so energy drinks in or out?
I'm going to say out again, but also...
You drink energy drinks.
but also it was really weird. I had this is such a strange and niche thing. I had an energy drink collection growing up. So So,
what did that entail?
So, again, put this through the lens of the fact that I am a very, very ADHD person. You get random hyperfocuses. And for me, especially between the ages of 11 and 13, my hyperfocus was different types of energy drinks.
That was just a fixation for 2 years.
Just something I got into.
Just the cans or like full beverages?
So, what I should have done was collect just the cans.
Okay.
That is what a sane human being with foresight would have done.
No.
But instead, I decided, you know what? I'm going to keep them full.
Okay.
So that, you know, maybe someday, who knows, I'll go and I'll enjoy this lovely 3-shelf energy drink collection that I've created for myself.
That took 3 years to build.
It was multi-year, and it was like one of those things where it was like every birthday I was getting energy drinks as a gift. It'd be like my friend who went to Spain and was like, here you go. Here's your energy drink. So it was like this was my like identity for multi-years. What ended up happening was one day I noticed there was some sort of liquid that was forming on the shelf where they were being stored.
No.
Come to find out that one of them had managed to corrode its way through the can, and it actually corroded the shelves
acid.
It was on.
It's crazy.
Exactly. And so it had corroded the shelf it was on. And then I realized that several of these cans were going through the same process in metamorphosis. And so I ended up having to make the sad, sad decision to empty them all.
It was the end of an era.
And to recycle them, which was very, very sad. Because then there was then we did get to the point of like, oh, why don't we just empty them and then clean the cans and then you can keep the cans. And I was like, now this feels, now that I have a little bit of distance from this and I now see that I've just become a hoarder of
the bubble
corroded
bars.
Trash.
Yeah.
I'm like, maybe I need to take a step back.
Okay.
So I'm, again, it's more of a personal thing. I'm
out,
not ready. I burned myself out on the energy drink front about 20 years ago, so.
Okay. Okay, next one. Thursday after work drinks.
God, I'm just going to sound like the boringest person in the world. Because for me, it's out. It's out because I also don't want... I don't want to go to get drinks after work. I want to go home.
Yeah, I want to go
home. I want to go home with my partner.
Also, when you have
work
the next day. And like, yes, for some people, Friday is a chill.
I also don't love to drink in general. I'm like, I don't really drink. Like, I'll have a beer after a rugby match because it is obligatory. Mm. But, like, I do not.
Have you ever done the big funnel?
What, like the boot?
Is it a boot? Yeah, maybe a welly.
Yeah, I've never. This is actually something. The second I now say this on camera, I'm going to be forced to do it. I've never drank it out of a rugby boot, which is supposed to be. Somebody will tell you, if you're a rugby player watching this, they will tell you you need to do this to be a real rugby player. That is how they get you. You don't have to do shit. You do not have
don't
to do
don't give
this.
In to them.
You do not have to give into that peer pressure.
Go home and play Nintendo Dogs.
You can go and play for a very long time and not have to subject yourself to that. So do not do it. But
after the drinking culture in the UK, like especially
crazy.
Rugby, was it a big
I mean, not even just rugby. It's about the same. It's outside of rugby that is crazy. Like the work culture around it, everything revolves around drinks. And it's
no
one thing.
Him.
If you were going to say, okay, Thursday drinks means literally we are going to go out, we're going to have one drink on this Thursday, and then we are going to go home. I could maybe get
you could get behind that.
Drinks in the UK is a 3-hour ordeal.
No. Yeah.
And I don't understand it.
A Thursday after work drinks, that's tequila shots at 9 p.m.
My social battery ends 90 minutes in. Like, I can do 90 minutes. Cool. It's great to see you. Great to catch up. Done. I cannot. It just drags on too long.
And
I just want to leave. So, no. Also out.
So, next one. Parkour.
Okay. Parkour is going to come in because
it's in.
Because it's so lame that it's now cool again.
Okay.
Because
I think
because I think to be at the stage right now where you are still somebody who is passionate about parkour and does not have any like trepidations at all about being seen in public, doing it, filming it, posting about it, like that's in because that is genuine love for the art of parkour and what you are doing because you are not getting any street cred.
No.
There is nobody who is looking at you now.
Because also I feel like the pipeline from like skateboarding to parkour is actually very small. And like, I feel like, yeah, I don't know. I'm not. Skateboard to me has got a bit of street cred, but does it anymore? Is it 2001 anymore?
I feel like it always does. I feel like skateboarding will always stick around. But parkour is definitely not cool. But that's what makes it in. That's what makes it in.
It's not cool, but it's in.
That's exactly. Okay. It just came right back around. That's how it all goes.
Okay. What about making your bed? In and out. this are we about to expose you right now?
No, because I think if it was any other year in my entire life, I would tell you it's out.
But it's, what, 2024? Because,
well, it's 2024, I'm 30 years old, and I'm finally at the point where I've been living my entire life with ADHD and understanding that actually having organized environments plays in my favor and not works against me. So even though I'm still probably not doing it most days, I still think it is in from a, like, you should be doing this best practices standpoint. Whereas any other year, I would not have advocated for it. I would have told you, waste of time. You're going to make it. You're going to get into it at the end of the day. It's going to be unmade again. You're literally just taking time out of your day to waste your time every single day you wake up. But now I get it. So.
And jump to Fergus, like, coming downstairs and be like, get up there now and make that bed.
It's not. Is he like a, not what's happening.
Oh, is he like an organized bed person? Organized environment.
Again, I think he has, I think the desire is there. Oh, okay. But I don't think either of us are actually, like, actualizing it and making it happen.
Domesticity is not the strong
side. No, we're both. I think he has more of a desire and a drive to do it than I do. I'm very much like, I'll let go, I'll live in the chaos. But I think he keeps me a little bit more on track because I will do it, I'll live in the chaos. But I will have consequences as a
thrive.
Result. And I won't thrive, but I'll just keep doing it because that's just me, I guess.
And then the last one. Let's go with turning on the big light. Are we a big light advocate?
We've been having some arguments about this recently.
Oh.
Is
this an Outtakes exclusive?
No, I am. I am a big light advocate.
Ugh.
I am.
Oh, gross.
I am. It's
so
very
gross, Devin.
It's very gross of me, but I need an immediate transition, especially if I'm, like, waking up in the morning. Like, there's no easing into it. It's like, if I'm getting up out of bed and now we're at the point where light is going to be entering into my day, it's just, it's coming all at one time. Yeah, it's like, it is going to be maximum brightness, just, like, deal with it, go. So I am always very much the one who, I'll go in and I'll wake Fergus up from a nap and I'll turn on the big lights.
No. Oh, that's...
Yeah, I know it's a red flag.
That is red flag.
But... I'm not gonna apologize for who I am.
You don't like a bit of warm mood lighting in the corners?
I do, but this all comes into the same thing of, like, do I understand and appreciate the utility of it? Yes. Am I going to be the one who takes the initiative?
Is it your reality?
And actually does it rather than just being the practical one who just flips a light switch on? No. Like, there's no chance. So I'm always just gonna do the easy thing, unfortunately.
Devin, thank you for going through that little segment with us.
Anytime.
And now we've got a strong authority on what's in and out for 2024. We've touched a bit on what we can expect for 2024 for you, Devin. So what's next for you? What can we keep an eye out for?
What is next?
Any big projects in the works?
I do have a lot going on, especially, like, just through my work with my G-Work. I've just been doing a lot around, like, organizing various community events. So going to hopefully be going to a lot of different Pride events this year and things like that.
National Student Pride.
National
will
Student Pride being one of them.
Appearance?
I will be at National Student Pride all day. I'll be there. Love it.
I'll see you there.
I went there for the first time last year. I had a great time. So I'm definitely going to be back.
Unfortunately, I couldn't catch you. I was in the podcast studio just
locked
working
away,
like a dog.
Doing what you got to do. It's just going to be a lot of that. But one thing, and it's not a project, unfortunately, I don't have anything super exciting that I can plug right now. I've just been too busy with just getting through my day-to-day life. But one thing very exciting coming up that I'm looking forward to is I'm going to be living in New Zealand for probably from April until the end of May this year.
Another relocation?
Just a temporary relocation. I'm still going to be working. I'm still going to be working, just a little vacation over there. Fergus is doing a medical placement.
Okay.
So
that's nice. So you can go together then.
So we're gonna go together and gonna be there for, like, just over a month and a half road tripping around. So I'm gonna be obnoxiously posting about it because New Zealand is my favorite place in the entire world and I cannot wait to be back there. So.
And if you want to follow Devin, where you're
yes. Focused? So you can go to That Gay Rugger, at That Gay Rugger, which, as you were saying, is a bit of a stark difference to my initial thoughts and attitudes
it's branding,
but it also came about just because of exactly what I told you, which is, like, that was my, like, biggest fear was
so kind of
being known
to
that. And it was just like, well, you know what, screw it, anybody who's gonna brand me that way and wants to think of me that way, like, let them, like, who really gives a shit? So
who gives a shit?
That was kind of the way I went for it. It was like, if that's the way that people are going to do it, I'm not going to concern myself too much with what those people think, so I'm just gonna claim it for myself.
Nice.
So at That Gay Rugger. I guess that's me now.
I like it.
So,
just Devin and Banyos has just disappeared into
I'm now the just a gay rugby.
That's why you can't open a bank account.
Yeah, well,
this
probably.
Name is not valid.
That's it might be what it is. I've lost the paper trail now ever since changing over.
And then Devin, would you mind just finishing off, just giving our LGBTQ plus listeners just, you know, some final words, whether it's word of wisdom, you know, any sort of positive final affirmation to send their way?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's going to be a super lighthearted, positive affirmation, but I would say to anyone watching this to just, one, like, take your space. Don't wait for somebody to give you the space. Like, go and actually take that space, because ultimately, if you wait, you're just going to keep waiting. Like, people aren't going to go and just offer you up space. And when you are in a position where you have been wronged and it's very obvious, like, advocate for yourself loudly and very unapologetically. Because ultimately, we need people to do that right now. Like, if you're not going to advocate for yourself, unfortunately, as much as I'd love to say that our allies are going to do it for us, and hopefully if there's an ally watching, you'll understand that we need people to step up. We really need people who are just going to go all out and make sure people understand that, you know, certain things that happen, certain things that are said are just completely unacceptable. So I think that's just one thing I want people to come away with. It's also, it's okay to be angry. It's okay to be sad. It's like, sometimes things happen and you're not going to be able to control your emotions or response to them. But ultimately, you can't necessarily control how you're going to react when these types of things happen. So you don't need to apologize for it.
That was a great end to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. And you've been a fantastic guest. Thank you.